Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
makes me angry. That's rage against the machine. Killing in the name. Arr.
Well, we decided to start off pretty low key there, I think. you know, with not much heavy guitar involved. That was recorded at Sound City Studios.
No way.
It was indeed. And we saw that fantastic documentary, which is a must listen. A much watch, actually. It's a fantastic thing about how the Foo Fighters
and Dave Grohl
rescued the Neve console from the failing studio, which Sound City was at the time. And but this, in the heyday, it recorded this track and this album, and they did it live, I think.
Wow.
And they got a whole load of guys in, their audience, and they all sat around in the studio while they played it live.
Amongst the stinking carpet and whiskey-soaked walls of Sound City.
That's right, yeah. They had that shag pile on the wall, didn't they? And stuff.
It was
apparently a horrific place, but produced some of the greatest
there
music.
There was a scene.
It certainly was.
So that album was released in 1992. It was their debut album.
Yeah, and it was initially done on cassette, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And it became very big in the
UK. That's a tape thing, by the way. Yeah. Just like, it's a little oblong plastic thing where you have a little small bit of tape that recorded music on and you put it into a machine and it used to play music back to you.
It still does, actually. We've got one downstairs.
Yeah, no.
A very fancy one, a three-head one.
I'll tell you what,
yeah.
Though, I don't miss having to get a pencil in and, like, tighten up the tape. And I don't miss the heartbreak of when my tapes got chewed.
Yeah.
And having to go and get the best head cleaner I could. All those kind of things. See, it's tradition. It was all the prices that you paid for actually having music.
It was.
Wasn't it? You had to give something of yourself and sort of part with money, I guess. Those are the days, eh?
But so, just back to the track, I mean, it's an amazing statement on American politics and what was going on at the time, you know. I mean, they were very, obviously very angry. A lot of the F word in that.
17 times, apparently, the uncensored version.
Is that right?
Yeah.
17. Well, that's the uncensored version, so therefore you've listened to it 17 times.
I know there's a real serious note there because it was released 6 months after the Los Angeles riots, which were triggered by the acquittal of four white police officers who beat black motorist Rodney King. And I know it was...
What's new?
Yeah.
1992 is this.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are being shot in the USA right now, you know, and in the UK. I mean, it's happening in the UK too. It's an awful... Awful, awful.
Tragically, it's an ongoing theme, so this song is just current.
Yeah, it is. It is. As is this one.
We'll be right back.
The Faces, Stay With Me.
I want to know who's Rita. Rita with the red lips.
Rita?
I know, I said that like Ree Roderick again.
Fantastic.
It just happens. I can't help it.
Well, it never ceases to sound. It's very boyish humour, isn't it? Or laddish behaviour, generally speaking.
I'm laughing.
I know, well. Anyway, The Faces, fantastic. Produced by them and Glyn Johns.
Oh, hi, Glyn.
The most fantastic.
We love you, Glyn.
We just love that guy.
Kick ass, isn't he?
Tremendous sound. All the beauty of The Faces encapsulated in one track there, because there's the chaotic playing that all just seems to mesh together. Ronnie Wood's fantastic rhythm playing, the bass, you know, Ronnie Lane.
I really like the bass part on
that,
you know, because it's really interesting. And I like the change in time signature too.
And very busy, and it's very busy, and he's halfway up the neck, isn't he? Yeah. It's quite high, you know. It's sort of a bit sort of John Entwistle really up there. Because, yeah. You know, John Entwistle played quite high a lot of the time.
I'd like to play that, actually, just because I think it would keep my interest. And there were bits, I'd feel like I was in an adventure playground where I'd be climbing up ladders, and there's bits where you'd slide down the slide and go, ding, 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 woo, because that's how it feels sometimes in pieces like that.
Yeah.
Really sort of, it's great fun.
And I love the solo bits, because they always seem to put solo bits, some drum breaks in, and that beautiful Wurlitzer piano break in there. It's a great track, you know, and obviously really, you know, did amazing amounts for the career.
Yeah, it was written by Rod Stewart and Ronnie Wood, about a one-night stand.
Is that right?
Yeah, apparently it was like Rita with the red lips.
Weta.
Yeah.
Okay,
stop,
we got it.
You got me going again. Yeah, apparently it's all about something about, the stay with me, but make sure that you're gone by the time I wake up.
And the album cover caused a lot of controversy.
Yeah, I was reading about this. So originally it was issued with, I forgot to mention the name of the album, 1971, A Nod Is As Good As A Wink to a Blind Horse.
Classic.
Yeah, we mentioned that in a show the other week. Now, the original issue of the album came with a large poster, which was a collage of an image of pills and pharmaceutical capsules, plus Polaroid photographs apparently taken on tour of the band and crew members reveling with naked groupies in hotel rooms.
I would expect nothing else. This is The Faces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So anyway, this is the other thing. Within a couple of weeks, the record company had second thoughts about the poster. Okay. And reissued the album without it, obviously turning the originals into like collector's items. But right, so it took them a few weeks.
Wow.
I'm thinking, though, is it the capsules or the naked groupies reveling in hotel rooms that they withdrew?
We can only hazard a guess at what those record companies' executives were thinking at that time.
Thank you. Focus and a track called Sylvia.
Amazing. One of the most underrated guitar players in the whole cosmos.
Jan Ackerman.
Well, he is. He still plays great, you know, but he's gone more to acoustic now. He does mostly acoustic. But when they recorded that, he was on fire. And his guitar tone, I love that sound. I just love playing it. It's a great riff, great lick, great tune, great melody. Written by the keyboards player.
Oh, yes. The chap that does demented yodeling.
That's right, yeah.
Thies van Leer.
Yeah, Thies van Leer. I always have real trouble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got trouble with my mouth tonight. It sounds like I've got...
It's because it's payback for you taking the mickey out of me and my free Woodwick.
It sounds like I've got a mouthful of...
I know.
Of golf balls or something.
You're funny.
Anyway.
It makes me want to... There's two things in that song. It makes me want to speak fluent Dutch. I don't know why, but I really wanted to back announce that song then, just going, because I only know Dewey in Dutch, which is see you later.
Oh, right.
And also, did you notice that the bass on that is really relaxed, and it's like a tall father figure stood in the middle of all that mayhem, all that stuff that's going on musically, and the bass is just there, smoking a cigar, going dum 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 dum,
yeah,
dum dum, bum 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 bum.
Beautiful. It is beautiful. It's a beautiful part, you know. The whole thing works so well together, and produced by our friend Mike Vernon.
Really? Yeah. Of course.
And again,
Mike's
recorded
to Focus, of course.
That's right. And recorded at my favourite studio in the whole world, no longer sadly there, Olympic, where Stay With Me, the previous track, was recorded with Glyn Johns.
Ah.
So two tracks, completely different. But actually, are they completely different? Because they've got a similar vibe to them, you know?
Yeah.
What I never noticed about that track, and only when you start to listen to it again on headphones, is a double-track guitar. Because the guitar is virtually completely double-tracked.
Right.
And it's mainly coming out of the left, but on the right, there's actually a ghost going on as well. And there's little bits of slight inconsistency. It's great, you know?
I thought you were going to say the tambourine, because I noticed the tambourine listening to it this time, sort of coming in. But it's, I mean, of its time, it was released in 1973 as a single as well. But the one thing you've got to do is the Christmas edition of the old Grey Whistle Test, 1972. It's a classic. It's when Focus segue into Hocus Pocus as well. You've got to watch that. If you haven't, check it out on YouTube or somewhere. It's fantastic.
An amazing performance. And I think on the back of that performance, they went straight to number four in the charts.
Well,
something.
It was like a rocket. In the heads of everybody, wasn't it? It's like, what is this?
A yodeling Dutchman, you know, and whistling Dutchman and flute playing Dutchman. Incredible musician.
And the main thing was, though, they just, every time we watch it, still, we giggle because they were having so much fun. And I think that's what's contagious about it. It was just simply quite magnificent.
Try your best just to make it quick. Pour my tin to the sink. Cause there must be something she can do. This heart is broken in two. Tell her it's a case of emergency. There's a patient by the name of Gregory. Night nurse, only you alone can quench the setters. I need attendance from my nurse around the clock. Cause there's no prescription for me. She's the one, the only remedy. Night nurse, only you alone can quench the shatters.
Gregory Isaacs, Night Nurse, a bit of Reggie.
I know. By the Cool Ruler, or the Lonely Lover, as he was known.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, isn't it? It's like, I mean, who doesn't want to be called a Lonely Lover or the Cool Ruler? You really do, don't you? I mean, everybody.
He's
it's
cool.
Like Johnny Guitar Watson. Who doesn't want to be called Johnny Guitar Watson? It's some of these guys have got such super cool names, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm stuck with Simon Campbell.
Well...
And you've got a cool name, Susie Starlight.
It is fun.
It is fun.
It is fun. I mean, can I just say about that song as well? That was written and released in 1982. I don't know when it was written, actually, but it's on the Night Nurse album.
Surprisingly enough.
not always, Sunshine. And his backing with the famous Roots Radix.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, when we have a friend, Will Lydgate, who is a bass player, and he's into reggae, isn't he?
Oh, very much so.
I was going to say
Reggae. Hawaii. Yeah, he lives in Hawaii.
Hawaii. Yeah, so he was telling us about the Roots Radix. I remember when we interviewed him ages ago.
Yeah, that's right. We did a show with him, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah.
What I love about that is, A, I mean, it's great kick drum sound, just a bit of production here, but also that lovely, I think it's probably a Moog, that synth sort of going through it, that sort of single line. It's really cool. Because a lot of this reggae stuff was actually so simple, and it's all in the groove, isn't it? It's all in the groove, and then with a beautiful vocal and lyric on top of it, you know?
And I think it was accessible as well. I think... With some of the reviews of that album, they were saying it was sort of dancehall reggae, that he was really good at crossing over and sort of opening up reggae to everybody, really.
Yeah, a wider audience, yeah.
Yeah, so you didn't... For me, I wasn't aware of any race or any colour. I just totally was absorbed in the groove of the song. It was welcoming, it was open, and I think that's what I really love about that album for me, was that it welcomed me. And I could get into that groove with them, and we're all hanging out. And that's what I love about Gregory Isaacs.
Well, the first time I really got into reggae, and it was to our mate Tim Wright. Tim Wright was a singer in Whitefire and various Little Brother and various other bands in my musical history. And he came into school one day, because we were at school together, and he said, Robert Plant's listening to this bloke. And I said, what's he called? He said, well, I don't know. He said, but it's this really crazy music from Jamaica. I said, what? I said, what's all this? So we put it on, of course, it was Bob Marley.
Really?
Yeah, and we were listening to it. We think, what's all that about? And why is Robert Plant into this? And, of course, later on Houses of the Holy, they did sort of, that sort of reggae tribute, Dear Maker, which is like, it's not a tribute, it's like just a reggae thing going on, you know?
Yeah, and
interesting, you know? But that's the first time I really heard reggae, and I got into it. And, of course, since then, you get it on at a party, and there is not one person that won't know. It's just universally popular music, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember years ago when we started gigging together for the first time. It was years ago now, and I thought I'd finished one of the songs, and you struck up this reggae beat, and you reggaed my song. Yeah. And I just remember looking around at you going, okay, we're going this way. And it was really good fun. Everyone loved it. So, you know, it's great to fuse and interpret your songs in different sort of styles as well.
Yeah,
it goes down.
Right.
It's beautiful.
And, of course, it turns the whole rock and roll thing on its head because, of course, the kick drums are the two and four, where the snare beat would normally be, you know, in a standard rock and roll back beat, as they say.
Mucky muck, castle made of clouds. There sits Wonder Boy, sitting oh so proudly. Not much to say when you're high above the mucky muck. Yeah, yeah. Wonder Boy, what is the secret of your power? You about young Nasty Man, arch rival and nemesis of Wonder Boy, with powers comparable to Wonder Boy. What powers, you ask? I don't know. How about the power of flight? Does it do anything for you? It's levitation, Holmes. How about the power to kill a yak from 200 yards away with mind bullets? That's telekinesis, Kyle. How about the power to move you? Joined forces, they formed a band the likes of which have never been seen, and they call themselves Tenacious D. That's right, me and KG.
That's me.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Supertones Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was Tenacious D and Wonderboy.
Oh, yes.
Well, mock rock it may be, but God, can that guy sing. What an incredible vocalist. He is a great rock vocalist, you know. And that track, it might be mock rock, but it's bloody good mock rock. And the song is fantastic. It's taking the piss out of everything, you know.
Perfectly.
Dave Grohl's on drums. And if you haven't heard the actual, the first album, Tenacious D, with tribute on, you've got to listen to it. You've got to have strong stomach for the language. But it is just amazing. It's funny. I mean, people sometimes don't think it is funny, but I think it's just bloody hilarious.
I think when I first heard it, because I got it straight away. I knew that it was incredibly intelligent comedic humor, actually, just because of the way that they nailed it so quite completely. They knew the character of what they were mocking and what they were ridiculing, and also loving at the same time. I think it's like all mixed up.
But for Dave Grohl to actually play drums on it, I mean, that's a big thing, you know, because Dave Grohl is probably, you know, in sought after by many people, but he decided to play drums on that after meeting him at the Viper Rooms in LA.
Yeah.
An amazing coincidence.
I love about those two is that Jack Black, the lead singer, and
Kyle Gass.
Exactly. Kyle Gass. Now, they met when they were at the Actors Studio in LA, and they became friends when they were over at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
No, is that
right? Yeah, as actors. So it's lovely that those two, because when I saw the video, I thought, who's that guy with Jack Black, you know, playing with Tenacious D?
Because they just don't look like rock and roll band. No, Kyle Gass looks completely un-rock and roll. But that is part of the whole thing, isn't it? And it was produced this by the Dust Brothers. And I couldn't believe it when I looked at it, because it's only recently I've just been, you know, looking at what we're playing on the show. And the Dust Brothers, the Beastie Boys and all that really super cool stuff from LA. Yeah. And it's hard to surprise it sounds so good.
Thoughts of you and all the things that come with emotional ties. And though memories do fade, this heavy-hearted side of me hates that I said all those things to you. And I'd forget you if I could. I know I probably should. For some amnesia to keep me in line. Why do I fall in love with the least bit of attention? I need some direction, affection in time. I'd forget you if I could. I know I probably should. This sleep and not thinking this through. Out, you changed my mind. The echoes from beside the scenes where you would cry. I'd forget you if I could. No, I probably should. Been sleeping, not thinking this through. But I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
I Can't Stand It by The Blossoms, or Blossoms.
Yeah, relative new band, named after a pub in Stockport. Where they're from.
That's cool. The Blossoms is actually also a name for a 1960s girl group in California.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it sounds more romantic, doesn't it? Named after a pub in Stockport.
It certainly does. And you know, what's he called? Ogden?
Tom Ogden.
Yeah, yeah, Tom Ogden, the singer. He sounds to me like John Power. I know John Power's from Liverpool. And Mr. Ogden is from Stockport.
Yeah.
In Manchester, South Manchester. But, you know, there seems to be a similarity in the sound of the voice to me. I don't know much for me.
He's got a really creamy vocal tone, hasn't he?
Mm.
Beautiful. And that was produced by James Skelly of The Coral. James actually signed the band, and he owns Skeleton Records. So that's the connection there. So maybe, I don't know. There's something going on, though. It's something familiar.
Yeah, but also it was recorded at Parr Street in Liverpool, where The Coral have actually done a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were in there. We've been in there a few times over the past 12 months, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
To Parr Street. Great studio. Lovely console.
Yeah, and it's great scene there in Liverpool at the moment. Really, just like... literally the next street away from Bold Street, isn't it? And it's all happening there. The bars and the restaurants have just sprung up, are just fantastic. It's really worth a visit. And I love the fact that the studio's at the heart of that as well.
Yeah, we went to a little Lebanese place up Bold Street. It was fantastic for lunch. It's really good.
Authentic.
Super cheap.
Super cheap. It was just an absolute inspiration, actually. You just felt like you were part of the pulse of the heartbeat of life.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So Chris Taylor, the manager of Parr Street, lovely guy, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a great vibe in there, you know.
It's
a great rock and roll vibe. Anyway, back to the Blossoms.
Well, the Blossoms, their first album, called Blossoms, was nominated for a Mercury Prize last year. I mean, how amazing is that for your debut album?
That's some honour. But to me, what shines through there, because this is the acoustic version of this, isn't it? And it's the song that shines through. And there is no doubt that any band will only really, really make it on a long-term basis if they've got the songs. It's just a thing. And that is a great song.
It is.
It works acoustically, just a bit of piano, you know, acoustic guitar. Great, you know, really good.
Well, their second album is called Cool IQ, released on the 27th of April this year. So it's cool. So I look forward to hearing that, actually.
And they were supporting a lot of big acts, weren't they?
Yeah, they've supported James. I think when they supported James, that was their turning point in terms of their career. Really,
sit down.
Yeah,
I did some work with James, you know, years and years ago.
Did you?
Yeah. I'll tell you about it later on.
Yeah, they seem like really good lads, actually. Great entertainers. I remember I was in Manchester when they sang for when we got the Commonwealth Games. A massive celebration. And I was stood next to some street theatre artists on stilts, like I don't know, 4 metres high up. And it was a great feeling in the streets. James, perfect band for that kind of celebratory event, actually. Great band.
Well, Manchester and Liverpool, great northern towns.
Absolutely.
Great musical heritage. And this, I'm sure, will become one of them.
Change, change, change. Change, change. Oh,
Aretha Franklin, Chain of Fools.
She's incredible. I love her.
And mostly done live. And when I say mostly, I think all the tracks were done live, but...
just pure talent and skill. And she's just incredible. That was released in 1967. 1967!
Produced by Jerry Wexler.
It's a hit. Print it.
Every time I hear his name, it always amuses me because he's one of the most charismatic guys that's ever been in the music business. And those were the days where they just used to make a decision. They didn't used to use Facebook and loads of marketing and find out what people wanted. They went on gut feeling and just released stuff, didn't they?
And what's the deal with that tremolo guitar?
Well, almost certainly that is an Ampeg Reverberocket.
It sounds very familiar.
Because we've got one. And it sounds just like that. It's got that sort of woody, midi sort of tone that you can't get out of anything else. And it's a great sound, you know. But it really, really is has a signature at the beginning of that. You know exactly what track it is.
As soon as you hear that.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
I mean, that was played by, I read about a guy called Joe South. And what's interesting is that Joe South wrote the songs Games People Play and I Beg Your Pardon.
No, Rose
I
Garden.
I Never Promised You.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that guitar player wrote those songs.
Holy moly.
It's a bit odd, isn't it?
And Spooner Oldham was on keyboards on this.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, but in those days, you know, the hive of musicians that were kicking around and just kicking around these studios, you could just pull people in and ring them up and say, get down here, you know. But who wouldn't in 1967 want to work with Aretha Franklin? She was probably one of the biggest female acts in the world at the time.
And I think they were, do you remember when we did the programme on her and on Jerry and Tom?
Yeah.
And we were looking at them trying to find the right songs because it was all about getting the right songs for the artist at that time. And I guess it's still like today. And although some people forget that actually you can play, but actually what will take you and keep you in a living is if you've got the songs.
That's right, yeah.
But I didn't. Who would have known back then that she would have gone on to get 18 Grammys and sell over 75 million albums?
Well,
that's crazy.
If there's any person that actually deserved to make a fantastic living out of music, it's Aretha Franklin. Because when you see her and you see these videos of her when she's actually in front of the piano, you know, and
she's mighty,
yeah,
forceful.
She's mighty, and she's singing, she's playing piano, and the band's there, you know, and there's pictures of Tom Dowd, who we referred to before, who's the engineer, just sort of talking to her before a take, and she'd be there, focused, bang, done. On to the next one, you know. Amazing musician, amazing voice.
Kind of makes more sense now because I was talking to my friend Foxy the other day. We were messaging each other and she said, oh, yeah, we're going over to Toronto. And it's like, what are you doing in Toronto? And she said, well, her partner Phil's a massive fan of Aretha. So they're flying out to Toronto to go and see her in concert. Right. So you're flying halfway around the world. And she warrants that, actually.
Dead right. But... now it's time to finish the show, I'm afraid.
No way.
Yeah.
It's gone really quick again.
Well, it has, but we have got a monster track at the end, of course.
Epic, actually. But before we leave you with this an incredible track. If you want to get in contact with us, we're on Instagram, Starlight Campbell. That's Starlight, S-T-A-R-L-I-T-E, Campbell. Her Twitter is at Susie and Simon, and Susie is spelled S-U-Z-Y. And that, and also on Facebook.
Yeah, and the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes and iHeartRadio. So please tell your friends.
Yeah.
We're going to play out with one of my favourite bands, Alvin Lee and 10 Years After, live.
Live, very important. I know you like live albums, don't you?
To me, that is the essence of an artist. I mean, I much prefer to play a live version of a track than the studio, because they seem to have more life, there's more power, and, you know, with all the technical considerations taken into account, sound and everything else, it really doesn't matter to me. It's more of the feel, it's what it makes you feel like, you know?
Do you know, I'd never heard of 10 Years After until I met you. She's quite interesting, really, because, and I'd never heard of Alvin Lee. I just missed that. It's a different time for me, but what's, he was known as this, he played Woodstock.
He did, headlined one
night. I know! I mean, this is why. How did I not know this? I've watched the DVDs before I met you, but I didn't actually know that was Alvin Lee in 10 Years After. It's very odd how it slipped through my understanding.
Well, they were absolutely massive at the time. You know, I mean, to headline Woodstock. And he was known as such a ferociously fast guitar player. And, you know, with feel and that whole thing, I mean, Help Me off this album, which is 10 Years After recorded live, is a fantastic version of it, you know. The band were great and he was marvellous.
And that was the... And so it's all kind of connected up as well, because when we bought our Trident console and we drove down to the south of Spain to pick it up...
Estepona, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't know at the time that Alvin Lee used to use our desk.
That's right.
For the latter stages of his career. And his widow, Evie, his wife Evie, was there. And we didn't know that was Alvin's wife. And she was just beautiful. Not that she wouldn't be if we had known, but it was just quite surreal, really.
It was. It was an amazing experience.
Because he's like one of your inspirations. Yeah. And there we were, all sort of hanging out and...
I remember drawing little diagrams when I was 16 of what the stage setup would be like. I've always been a gear. And me and Fletch used to be there, you know, and we'd draw it out, and I had big stacks of Marshalls and stuff, just like Alvin.
So I'm going home. Baby, 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 baby
come out, baby, what we have to do. Rock! I'm going home, see my baby, baby. I'm going home, want to see my baby, yeah, yeah. I'm gonna love you, darling, love you all night long, yeah. Ooh, baby, 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 ooh, baby, baby. I'm gonna hold me. I'm gonna hold me. Yes, baby, I'm going home. So come on, baby, I'm gonna rock and roll for you. Let's rock!
Thank you.
I won't go home, baby.